Today's podcast is sponsored by David M. Hosmer Law Office, which is celebrating David's 30th year practicing law. You may not need a lawyer, but when you do, you need an excellent one. Contact him at davidhosmer@hotmail.com.
Welcome to Yankton's Yardbirds, a podcast presenting the World War II stories of Yankton's veterans. After 165 interviews and countless hours of preparation, it's time to share these stories. As of now, they'll be shared by podcast and later will be presented in print. If you have questions, free to contact me at davidhosmer@hotmail.com. Please be advised that there is some offensive language within these interviews. When I'm speaking, I've edited my language to more modern times. This was an unplanned podcast. My heart is aglow with the warmth of the season. I'm so fortunate, and I want to spread a little good cheer. I previously gave a speech that I entitled, White Sheets. A white sheet has dual meaning. We slumber comfortably between the clean white sheets. Every soldier, sailor, marine, and pilot during World War II wanted to return home and to sleep beneath clean sheets. However, a white sheet is also the final cover over a fallen soldier. A clean sheet is also a reminder that I have it good. And I have it good because a lot of people sacrificed for me. It might be cold out, and I'm cold, but I wasn't at Bastogne. I may not have taken a shower for a day, but I wasn't a Marine sitting in a trench at Guadalcanal. I might be hungry, really hungry, but I didn't walk a path in the baton. No matter how bad your day is, it is nothing compared to the worst day of a soldier, Marine, or sailor. Nearly every veteran I interviewed didn't want to discuss their worst day. They wanted to talk about the good days, the funny story, the coincidence, their hopes, and the loves of their lives. Today's topic is Christmas through the eyes of a few veterans. To some, Christmas was a relief, a safe port. The lucky 147th was diverted from the Philippines to Australia. The Willard A. Holbrook arrived at Brisbane, Australia on December 24th. On Christmas Day, 1941, this group of South Dakotans were welcomed with open arms. They marched to a large shelter in a park and feasted on Christmas dinner. After many weeks of food at sea, according to Cliff Hicks, this meal was great. It must have also been a bittersweet moment. Wartime restrictions had already been established, so there was no way for the men in the Lucky 147th to communicate with their families. In fact, their families did not know their whereabouts until around Easter of 1942, when alerted by Senator Carl Mundt of South Dakota. Don Modrigger was happy to be on dry land, but not entirely satisfied, at least not in hindsight. Mutton was the entree. Don had never eaten mutton before, and he didn't like it. He said his first taste of home was the taste of a Coca-Cola. Arnold Albrecht, on the other hand, said he was most excited about the taste of a cold beer. Some men ordered coffee with cream on the side. The waitress brought a cup of coffee and the milk in a saucer. No water was served with the meal. There were no napkins. 3 days later, they were headed north for parts unknown. To some, Christmas was a disappointment. Leroy Kustemeyer was born about 10 days prior to Christmas in 1924. He stressed that his father was 55 when he was born. I graduated from Hitchcock High School on May 22, 1942, he said. I was 17. On June 7, 1942, I traveled to Huron, South Dakota, and enlisted in the Navy. After boot camp at Great Lakes, Illinois, he was sent to Norfolk, Virginia. I was waiting to get aboard a ship. I had just finished my radio school, and I was ready to ship out. It was Christmas Eve of 1942. However, there was one problem. There was no dinner because all the cooks went over the hill. They left the ship. I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "They all went AWOL. They went to town to celebrate. All we got was cold turkey," he said. To some, Christmas was anticipation. Military service was a family tradition to the family of Ken Hensler, who hailed from Worthington, Minnesota. His father served in the Great War, although he didn't talk about it much. And both of his brothers were already in the National Guard during World War II. Ken was a Navy medic attached to the 1st Marine Division. New Caledonia was the staging area for Ken's first beach landing. He was definitely ready to leave there because a monsoon had swamped their camp. They had water literally up to their knees. They climbed aboard an LST where each man slept topside with his equipment and supplies. Their destination was New Gloucester on the west end of New Britain, located in the Bismarck Archipelago. New Britain is a large volcanic island. On Christmas Day, Ken watched the shore bombardment. "They blew the hell out of it before we got there. I felt good about it," he said. Unfortunately for the Marines who landed at Cape Gloucester on the day after Christmas 1943, it was the beginning of monsoon season there as well. He was nervous, but the beach landing was nearly uncontested. To some, Christmas was the end. Garland Ordell Husby, born the 17th of May 1924, was adopted by Oliver and Grace Husby of Yankton. Ordell attended Yankton High School and later Yankton College. Bob Moore from Yankton knew him and described him as a good kid. Ordell joined the service in March of 1943 and married Elma Barnes on his 20th birthday. American success fending off U-boats in the open seas caused the Germans to change their strategy. They stayed closer to the European coast. One of the worst tragedies in the Battle of the Atlantic was the SS Leopoldville, a converted troop ship used many times during 1944. On Christmas Eve, 1944, it was on its way to Cherbourg, France, to unload the men of the 262nd Regiment, 66th Division, who would replace the 94th Division in Brittany. At about 5 p.m., the Leopoldville was about 5 miles off the Cherbourg coast when it was struck by a U-boat torpedo. Both the air temperature and the water were freezing. After the alarm to abandon ship was sounded, the Belgian Congo crew took the lifeboats. The ship slowly sank in 2 hours. As a result of the slow descent, the men were reluctant to dive into the cold water. A rumor circulated that Germans were firing at survivors in the water, another reason to stay aboard. There were 2,235 men aboard and 763 souls, one of whom was Staff Sergeant Husby, who was buried at the Normandy American Cemetery and Memorial at Colville-sur-Mer, France. There's also a stone in the Trondheim Cemetery in Volland, South Dakota. Eugene Wiedenbach from Scotland, South Dakota, who was stationed off the beach at Normandy, was one of the men who was required to divert the frozen, bobbing bodies back onto shore. To some, Christmas was fear. Helen Kipke Granning was born in Yankton on August 29, 1921, but lived in north of Mission Hill, South Dakota. On November 7, 1942, Helen enlisted in the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps, an attached unit to the United States Army, which had been created in 1942. Christmas Eve Day of 1944 was memorable. The Battle of the Bulge had been raging since December 17th. Helen's unit was only 10 miles from the front lines. Times were drastic. The military placed guns atop their hospitals in violation of the rules of war. Only a Red Cross was permissible. After they first arrived at Liège, Belgium, they often walked outside and heard... It was a German V-bomb in the distance. Helen showed me a picture of that, which a GI had snapped. It was usually a waste of time because they landed elsewhere. However, on Christmas Eve, every 5 minutes for 24 hours, they heard coming slower and slower. That's when you take cover. The Belgians ran and stood against walls. They were very afraid. She said, "We were young and dumb." In fact, V-bombs hit the hospital twice. There were slats on the walls filled with plaster and the dust flew. So they put sheets and blankets over the patients to protect them. During the bulge, soldiers with frozen feet hobbled into their hospital. Helen had frostbite as a kid, but this was severe frostbite on these men, many of whom were young and barely trained and were wearing improper clothing. America was desperate for troops, enlisted them, put them on a plane, and then put them on the front line. She didn't see any shell shock, but she wasn't looking for it either. "My thought," she said, "was just to live." Helen said that they also treated German prisoners. When asked about how this went, Helen replied, "If you're a Christian, how do you feel? They don't want to be here any more than I do. We're doing the job. They are doing their job." The Germans who came in the hospital were old, 72, and young, 14. And they were desperate. She said, "We were almost desperate too." To some, Christmas was a near miss. One of the troopers at Bastogne was Ken Axelson, who lives in Wanamingo, Minnesota. His first military duty was on Normandy beaches where he looked for injured men and dead soldiers. He hated that job. It was so bad that he volunteered. A direct violation of the golden rule in the military, never volunteer. After Operation Market Garden in September, the American Airborne needed medics. His buddy saw a flyer advertising for volunteers to join the 101st Airborne. He and two other friends volunteered. Ken was assigned to the 2nd Battalion, 502nd Parachute Infantry Regiment, which gathered in French barracks at Mormelon, France. After just a few days of orienting himself, he was instructed on the evening of 17 December to gather his things and to get ready to move out. Ken, who was known as Red the Medic, showered and then jumped into an open-air grain truck with other men. Older than all get-out, he said. It was Monday, the 18th of December, and they drove north to Bastogne. Axelson was part of what he called the Christmas party. A four-man patrol moved between Champs and Longchamps every hour, and German soldiers had been seen on that road. A man ran into the aid station where Ken was sleeping on hay in his bag and said, "Wake up! Wake up! Hundreds of Germans are spilling over into the road." The officers split the men, including the medics, into two squads. Ken dug in on the south side of the woods on the north side of the road. It was cold and the ground was snow-packed. And it was 3 a.m. and it was pitch black. All night, he heard machine gun fire. And all night, he saw red and silver tracers. American tracers are red. At one point, Germans crossed the road and got behind him. An American machine gunner kept them at bay. Finally, American mortars were dumped atop the Germans, who then retreated back across the road. Ken heard them digging and talking all night long. But he was unharmed, tired, and returned to the aid station. To some, Christmas is a warm feeling. On May 21st, 1944, Joe Reynolds turned 17 years old. At that time, a 17-year-old could only enlist in the military if his parents agreed. Joe asked his mother, and she reluctantly agreed. He and four other guys enlisted together on the 6th of June, 1944. It was all he could think about because one of his buddies was already in the service. In late 1944, prior to Christmas, he and a lot of other men were in a large building located in the grounds of the Old World's Fair. Those men with last names that began with A through M went one way, and those with N through Z went to Mare Island on Viejo, California. Those men, including Joe, made up the crew of the USS Pasig, a water distiller which toted potable water. After the invasion of Japan became unnecessary due to their surrender, Joe stayed at Eniwetok. His ship continued to fill the holds of other ships with water so that they could return home to the States. The men knew the war was over as they celebrated Christmas in 1945. They simply had to put in their time. He and a few other men thought of home and decided to erect their own version of a Christmas tree. The tree was composed of a broom handle, wire, pipe cleaners, nuts, bolts, paper, and shiny things, all of which was sprayed green. The northern star must have been bright as a bulb as those men reminisced about their families, a hot homemade meal, and their soon-to-be reunion. Merry Christmas to you and yours. Enjoy the Happy New Year as well.
If you are interested in sponsoring an episode of Yankton's Yardbirds, please contact David Hosmer at davidhosmer@hotmail.com. All content for this podcast was created by David Hosmer, and all production was performed by Eric Berenger. Thank you for listening to this episode of Yankton's Yardbirds.